Welcome to Econoday's Economist Roundtable. I am Ann Picker, Econoday's Chief Economist. With me today are Jeremy Hawkins, who covers the UK, Europe, and India, while Mark Pender covers the US. Yesterday afternoon, Fed Chair Janet Yellen spoke. Everyone was waiting to hear what she would say about Friday's disappointing employment report, and as a result, how that would impact future Fed actions. Mark, tell us all about it.
1 month is 1 month's data. That's the bottom line. Labor market was showing very solid strength. It was really the leading indicator on the economy, really the central strength of the economy. And the May report turned out to be the weakest, really, of the whole economic cycle going back to 2009. And that really wasn't indicated or in an advanced way from any of the other indicators, really. Claims did pop up briefly. But it could have been in early May, but it could have been related to the Verizon strike. But they did come back. So this really was kind of out of the blue. And it also included very, unfortunately, the trend this year was for marginal workers or discouraged workers coming back into the labor force, which is a sign of real strength. But they backed out in a major way in May, and it brought down the unemployment rate to 4.7%, which is actually a sign of weakness, not a sign of strength. So, yeah, and Janet Yellen played it pretty balanced yesterday, saying that it was pointing to other indications of labor market strength, and suggesting that we'll have to wait to see if this is repeated. And the general assumption of her talk is that it will not be repeated. But then she did concede that if it is repeated, then policy will adjust to that. So there is no chance right now for a rate hike at the June FOMC, which will be next week. And however, the rate hike chances are still alive for the meeting in late July. But still, this is an unfortunate indication in the economy. And I guess it brings it into line with the global economy more. The U.S. economy had been showing, at least the labor market part, had been showing solid strength. More so than other readings, but now it looks like we're a little bit low. We had revised productivity this morning, and it was very weak. Of course, American workers are not performing very well, and it's taking them longer to do the same amount of work, and you have to pay them more to do it, even though pay relatively is still low. And this reflects a lack of investment in new equipment to a large degree. So the outlook right now for the economy has gone from the beige book, I think, really captured it, the last beige book that was prepared for the FOMC, which really is a modest, maybe on the best you could say a moderate growth in the economy. But it seems to be pretty much in the modest range. So and the inflation readings weren't so great in the haven't been great. They've been flat. At about 2.5% for year-on-year wage growth, and about just a bit over 1.5% for their core PCE inflation readings. And these aren't going anywhere either. So there really is no urgency to raise rates. And but you know, we'll have to see how things unfold, and hopefully that we'll see a pickup back in the June employment report, and that'll be the big indicator for the July FOMC meeting.
Mark, can I ask you a quick question?
Sure, please.
Brexit. Having spent the last 18 weeks prattling on about Brexit, I was wondering, what's your feeling in terms of whether or not it would have any impact on the FOMC's deliberations? Is it important enough, at least at the margin, to perhaps prevent a rate hike going through, or do you not think it's as important as that?
It's definitely important, but Britain does decide to exit the union, well, that would be a big wild card, and it would be definitely on the it would push against any further rate hike, because that would point to greater slowing or continued slowing in Europe, which is which is of course a major trading partner and financial center. So, well, let me just ask you, what are your feelings on Brexit? Is it going to pass?
Okay, well, so moving to Europe, I must kick off with Brexit. I think it's quite hard work trying to find any sterling traders over here with any hair left now. I mean, the pound's been going up and down like a yo-yo, according to what these latest Brexit polls are suggesting. I think a couple of weeks ago, it did seem that the trend was clearly moving in favour of the Remain in camp. But certainly over the last week or so, we've seen those wanting to leave the European Union. The pollsters are suggesting that in some cases now they've got a lead. And I suppose something which certainly shook the markets back end of last week was that we had one poll, telephone poll, which typically speaking have been strongly in favour of remaining in the European Union, suggesting that we might actually be moving out. So it's still anyone's guess at the moment. It's got to be said. I think probably the best way of looking at it is just to take the average of a last six polls or so to try and get hold of some underlying trend. For what it's worth, they're currently suggesting as of this morning that those wanting to stay in the union's up about 45%, those wanting to leave 43%, so just a 2 percentage point gap there. But of course, we've still got some 12% or so of those who really don't know which way they're going to vote at the moment. For what it's worth, and I certainly wouldn't hang my hat on it, I still think we'll probably vote to stay in the European Union, but it really is anybody's guess at the moment. And I think complicating the whole issue even further now, as a result of this sort of closing in what the polls are saying, there's all kind of talk coming out now about what those who want to remain part of the European Union might actually do. Now, that's important in the sense that if you look at the composition of the UK Parliament, then it's been estimated that probably about 454 of the sitting MPs clearly want to stay part of European Union. Only 147 definitely want to pull out. So that means on paper, at least, that were we to get a vote from the general population in favour of Brexit, there may be some sort of deals going on behind the scenes to try and prevent a complete Brexit from taking place. And it's worthwhile remembering that this referendum itself is not legally binding. Parliament would actually have to pass the legislation needed to get the UK out of the EU, in particular going back to the 1972 European Communities Act, which took us into the European Union in the first place. That would have to be repealed. And so there has been talk that there may be some deals to the effect that at least tries to keep us in the single European market, even if not part of the European Union. In any event, that just underlines the fact that no one's really got a clue which way this is going to go at the moment. And so that very much is being reflected in the performance of the pound. One thing I would reiterate, I think, as we touched upon last week, is that the haranguing between the various parties, well, I'd say members of the parties, is getting really quite nasty now. And there's this increasing sense that whatever the Brexit vote comes in as being, there's going to be a real issue trying to keep the current Tory government together. David Cameron's had a lot of personal attacks and indeed his senior ministers as well. So it could well be the case that even if we get a vote to stay in this European Union, that political uncertainty in the UK has reached such a level that the pound doesn't benefit, or at least doesn't benefit for very long in the first place.
Jeremy, can I ask you a quick question? Is there an ideological view on this? Is there a right wing, left wing, opinion on this?
Yeah, not really. Not in terms of the political spectrum. The interesting thing is you look at the major parties. Well, okay, the Tories are kind of split down the middle at the moment. Roughly half of them want to stay in the European Union, the other half don't. But in terms of the two principal opposition parties, the Labour Party are very much pro staying in the European Union. The Liberal Democrats, or what remains of the second opposition party, are also in favour. The likes of the Scottish Nationalists want to stay in as well. So it's not really from that sense. It's more to do with, I suppose, without belittling it, the kind of Little Englander mentality whereby a number of Brits have sufficient of the diktat almost being laid down by European legislation and the loss of sovereignty over how the UK does things. So I think it's coming more from that sort of angle, I think, rather than into the political spectrum. I quickly move on to just some other
I was just going to ask you to move on.
Yeah. Right, Europe then. ECB meeting last week, was no surprises there. I mean, no changes in interest rates, but and it's worth pointing out that Draghi was, if anything, perhaps a little bit more dovish than some people anticipated. And he acknowledged really for the first time that Eurozone growth could well slow in the second quarter. That would come after an unexpected upward revision to the first quarter GDP figures we had this morning. They now show a 0.6% quarterly rise versus a 0.5% last time. Well, that just takes us back to what the preliminary flash estimate said. But there have been some worrying signs for the second quarter. Retail sales in April were flat. They haven't grown now for a couple of months. We've seen manufacturing orders slowing as well. We've seen basically stable PMIs for both manufacturing and for services. So it does look as if we're going to see a slowdown in the second quarter in the European Union, or Eurozone, I should say. And that's going to sustain speculation about at least a possible cut in interest rates from the ECB later in the year. But a quick just round off with Switzerland. There was a 0.1% quarterly increase in Swiss GDP in the first quarter. That's our first look at them. I should say, though, that the breakdown of that is much stronger than the headline figures suggest. Growth was hit really by just an unwinding of stocks and a deterioration in net trade, a small deterioration there. Domestic demand was strong, and that could be important, if I dare mention it again, Brexit, because if we do go for that, the Swiss franc is going to be a safe haven currency. And if the economy is doing well, particularly domestic demand, it encourage those capital inflows. And the RBI, sorry, second time I'm rounding off here, India, the RBI, no change today. They're worried about inflation. It looks like if we're going to get a rate cut there, it's going to be a lot later this year. And that is it.
Thank you, Jeremy. Now a quick summary of what's going on in the Asia Pacific area. Very early this morning, U.S. Eastern Time, the Reserve Bank of Australia kept its policy-making interest rate at 1.75%. The RBA had lowered its rate by 25 basis points at its May meeting. However, the RBA's language in its statement appeared to leave the door open to further easing, and in fact, many analysts expect a further cut in August after the release of the quarterly inflation data on July 26th. Persistently low inflation was the RBA's justification for the May cut. First quarter CPI was down 0.2% on the quarter and up only 1.3% from a year ago. That is quite a bit below the RBA's inflation target range of 2 to 3%. There was little in the way of new material in the statement. The statement said that an appreciated exchange rate could complicate the transition of the economy away from one heavily focused on the export of commodities amid a downturn in that industry. But modest concern over the direction of the currency is nothing new from the RBA. They've spent a lot of words talking the currency down over the last year or so. On the Australian economy as a whole, the RBA was upbeat. First quarter GDP surprised and was up 1.1% on the quarter and 3.1% from a year ago. Looking ahead, beginning tonight, there will be the deluge of data from China. Tonight, May merchandise trade is on top tab, followed by consumer and producer prices tomorrow night. Industrial production and retail sales are scheduled for early Sunday morning. The FOMC meeting is not the only one scheduled for next week. The Bank of Japan, which seems to hold their meetings in tandem with the FOMC, will also announce its policy decision on Wednesday night, U.S. Eastern Time. This will follow the Fed's announcement. The yen appreciation is bound to be a major topic on this at this meeting, and what the BOJ decides to do shall be very interesting. That wraps it up for me. Thank you, guys.